Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. This is your host, Maruf Yusuf, and I have some exciting news to share with you today. Over the last 3 years, I have interviewed many entrepreneurs on this podcast, Muslims who love what they do and make a good living, and shared their stories. Many of you asked me the same question over and over. How can you also be like these successful guests? But what you may not know is that I also talked one-on-one with thousands of Muslim entrepreneurs, professionals, and seekers from all walks of life in the last 10 years. Their question was the same. How do we live our lives as Muslims with meaning and impact? Through these conversations, I have noticed patterns in what successful Muslims do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do what they do. I have taken all of these insights along with my learnings from hundreds of books and put them into a book called 7 Steps to Success in Deen and Dunya. This book is based on the Quran and Sunnah and proven business principles. It is for those Muslims who do not limit Islam only to masjids or prayers, daily salah, but see the Islam as a way of life. The book introduces a new way to live for you as a Muslim, inshallah. With a whole year to read and implement these steps, you have nothing to lose, but a lot to gain. And if for any reason you're not happy, you can get a full refund. So take action today and get the book on Amazon as a Kindle, paperback, hardcover, or audiobook on Audible, or you can also get it via the link in the show description. Don't miss out on this opportunity. Get your copy of 7 Steps to Success in Deen and Dunya. Embark on a journey of a lifetime towards a more meaningful, impactful life as a Muslim, inshallah. Now, back to the show.
Dear listener, based on many requests from our listeners, we are launching a Muslims on Fire Academy. It's for those who want to do more than just listening. It's for those who not only want to be inspired, but to be one of the Muslims on fire as well. It's for those who want to discover their purpose in life, follow their dreams, and live in prosperity. If this is you, join us for a journey of a lifetime. The introduction course is free. Learn more at academy.muslimsonfire.com. Learn more at academy.muslimsonfire.com.
Hey, assalamu alaikum. This is Maruf, your host at Muslims on Fire. I have a special brother from UK, Brother Ibrahim. Hey, Brother Ibrahim, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Maruf. It's a pleasure to be on.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. You know what? You're challenging me today because the first time I installed the Microsoft Windows Teams. Yeah. And another first thing is that you are the first person I'm talking to in 12 hours on the podcast. That's going to be very challenging, very interesting topic, hopefully, inshallah. I love that.
I like how we've kind of been on different podcasts.
Exactly. So we're going to be very, hopefully it's going to be interesting. Why don't we start with this? Why don't you start with telling us who you are and what you do, and then we deep dive.
Yeah, let's do that. So my name is Ibrahim. I'm the co-founder of Islamic Finance Guru, which is an Islamic finance comparison analysis review website. Think of it like the Muslim money saving expert or the Muslim nerd wallet, something like that. I've been full time on this company, the startup of mine, for about, I'd say 9-10 months now, but it started off as a blog about 5 years ago now. So we started off as a labor of love many, many years ago. And for us, the core mission is how can we make Muslims wealthier globally? Because Muslims are about 20% poorer than the rest of the world. And how can we kind of help minority communities as well generally? And we think there's 2 ways that you can do that. One is by helping every single Muslim investor and minority investor get access to capital and get access to you know, getting the best investments and getting themselves on the property ladder, etc. And then the second thing is we want to get Muslim entrepreneurs the support and capital and networks they need to succeed. So those are the kind of two big things that we work on.
But
that's kind of me in a nutshell.
That sounds good. So here's the thing. Usually, as you know, in the Muslim community, when it comes to money, we have this thing. We don't usually probably talk much. But today, I think we're going to talk about a bit more about money with you as well. So the usually show goes on as if first we're going to get to know you, your childhood, where it all starts, and up until now. Will that be okay with you?
Let's do this.
Okay, sounds good. So tell us where the little Ibrahim started the whole thing, the journey, and what are the things that you remember from your childhood that you think you might have affected where you are today?
So I was born in Pakistan, in Karachi, many, many years ago. And I grew up, both my parents were doctors. I came over here when I was about four. So I came to England when I was about four. I moved around a lot because of my dad's job. So we've lived in about 20 different places in the UK. So I've seen pretty much all of the UK. And I think from an early childhood, my mum and dad were very focused on, you know, teaching us Islam and inculcating in us this idea that we are here to serve the community and the world, and we should be making sure that our abilities are best used for that. And that was kind of, you know, forced or encouraged upon us from the start. So, you know, I was doing da'wah tables, you know, come rain, winter, sunshine, whatever. I was sat on a da'wah table every week for many years, from like the age of about 11 onwards, I think. And then I was teaching in a local community school, even though I was 14, and the kids were like 12. So that was a very hard class to deal with. I was doing that. And it wasn't like because I'm an amazing individual. It was more just because my mom and dad were really keen for me to do that. And they kind of pushed me into it. I think that's a great thing. So yeah, that's kind of like, you know, a bit of a snapshot of my childhood.
So, I mean, there are two things just popped out in my mind right away. So one thing is that, you see, we as kids, we kind of do what our parents do, not necessarily what they say, right? So it seems that, mashallah, your parents were doctors, as you said, right? And they were serving the community. They may not probably preach to you much, like, to do this, but you see what they're doing and you begin to do it as well. That's a lesson number one for us as parents, right, to follow through. And the second thing I want to ask you is that we recently relocated from Denmark to Canada. And one of the things I noticed that, and especially my daughter, is that she was a bit upset. Oh, we're going to lose our friends, you know. I want to, like, get back to you on that one. Like, you mentioned, like, you have moved to 20 more places. How did it have an effect on you? Did you feel this thing, you are always moving and maybe you're not taking root and friends, or maybe you were busy enough and you didn't pay attention to that anyway?
It's a good question. So my sense is that when I was young, I basically lived for a year in lots of different places from the age of about four to about, I would say, when I was about eight or nine. So there's like four or five different places. And then from about the age of about eight or nine, we were actually very, like, I think out of all of the five siblings, I was probably the one who had the longest period of time in quite a stable place. So like from year three or four, which was about when I was eight or nine, all the way till when I left sixth form college, which is 18, and then, you know, just before you go off to university, that period of time, that 9 years, was in one place, broadly speaking. Like, we've moved around a little bit within that place, but it was still one place. And I think that, you know, that having I think it kind of gives you the best of both worlds, because you're A, quite ready to be flexible, because as a kid, if you've moved around a lot, you're used to kind of having to quickly rewire things. But then at the same time, I think there's a benefit to being stable as well and in a place for a long period of time. And so I think in a weird way, I could have got the benefit of both worlds. And I think stability, especially during the later years when you're in secondary school and high school and et cetera, I think that's probably where it's more valuable than in the younger years. So yeah, I think it kind of worked out, alhamdulillah.
Okay, sounds good, interesting. So as you said, so one of the things you do today, Islamic Finance Guru, like giving Muslims the financial advice and services, did it start like that? Or when you mentioned also school or high school, and after high school, what would you end up studying at college or university? How did it go?
So you mean at university?
Yeah, university, for example, after, because you see that the purpose of the show is that one of the things we really want to find out is that we want to get out, we are in your shoes, we're trying to follow your path in a way and we're trying to learn. And there are a lot of teenagers and adults listening to the show, and that, because once something we, when we see, look at people they see today, right now, right? Today, right now, what you do, we don't necessarily know the backstory. And always there's this, when you look at back, you can connect the dots looking back, right? Not front. So what I'm saying is that when you are studying at school and also choosing your college, you, whatever the major you wanted to study, like, what did you choose? That's the first question. Was it something that you knew that's what you want to do? You know, that's the question. The next question, I guess.
Yeah, so... I think that from the start, like when I was thinking about university, I read this book about called Who Runs This Place?
Okay.
Which, by a journalist who basically scanned the way the British establishment was structured, like the government, civil service, banks, academia, various different key institutions. And he tried to work out who was running this place, like who was in those institutions. And one thing that came up a number of times was that in the UK in particular, there's a degree called PPE, Philosophy, Politics, Economics, offered by the University of Oxford, which is a degree that lots of leaders do. So people in politics, in finance, in business, in in the media, and in the civil service, they all do this degree. So people like David Cameron, people like Ed Miliband, David Miliband, a whole bunch of the front bench in the Houses of Parliament, Robert Peston, the former BBC economics editor, and the list goes on and on and on. There are lots of people who've done this degree called PPE, and I was like, all right, fine. Well, if that's what these guys are doing, then, and there's not that many Muslims who are doing it, let me just go for that then.
So it's called PPE, huh?
Yeah, PPE, Philosophy, Politics, Economics. Mm. It's a great degree, very, very kind of versatile. And it, if you want to do it, it's a great degree if you do it anywhere, but obviously the best place to do it is Oxford.
I see.
That's where it started.
Do you struggle with deen and dunya balance in your life? Meet Ummaland.com, a Muslim social network where your ego, nafs, is not in the center. It is a place to feed your soul with daily inspiration, to make new Muslim friends, and connect with Ummah. Visit www.ummaland.com and download free for your iPhone or Android.
Is it specific to Oxford? Like, but you said you could do it other places, but Oxford is the best place. Interesting. I've never heard of it. That's interesting.
It's Oxford started off the degree, and it's like the most famous, degree, the most famous PPE courses at Oxford, but then lots of other places do it. And they're, very credible courses elsewhere as well. But from a purely like a networking perspective, this is the place to do it, because I can guarantee you that I was, I was interacting with future prime ministers and politicians because of just the fact that I studied PPE.
I see. Wow, mashallah. So you want to be where the things at?
Yeah, but I don't think it was like it wasn't. It was a genuine kind of you know, I always think of Muslims as the underdog, and I feel like, you know, if I as a Muslim have the ability to try my best and, you know, get into somewhere like this, then I should. And I'm like, you know, I see myself as in many ways like a representative of the Muslim community. And I don't think, and I know for a fact that there are many, many people at Oxford who are much cleverer than I am, with far more ability and resources. But that's not, you know, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he doesn't look at who's better than you. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he looks at what's the best that you could achieve given your talents. And it's not like it's, frankly, you know, for some people getting into Oxford is not, it's not possible for them because of their background, because, you know, of the way they grew up, or whatever it was, right? And things out of their control or things in their control. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala isn't going to, you know, demand. It's not, someone who goes to Oxford is not better than someone who doesn't. But if you can, then I think you should, like, you know, you should try and get the maximum out of your abilities. So that's, you know, that's kind of like the thinking. And then after Oxford, I was always thinking about Islamic finance as the next step, because, you know, not very crudely, I was thinking, okay, finance is quite an impactful area, and Islamic finance must be obviously a great way of doing it. So that's kind of like the things that were going through my mind for after university.
Interesting. So after Oxford, so you just jump into Islamic finance right away, or you did something in between?
So I actually took the year out to start my Alim course and study Islam. And part of, whilst I was doing that, I realized I had some spare time. So I started doing my master's as well in Islamic banking and finance. And I knew from like an early age, after university, I knew that in Islamic finance, if you want to do well, then you need to combine both the traditional study, but also, you know, the modern and, you know, secular studies as well. Both of those need to kind of come together for it to be really compelling. And so then I started, essentially just set about, you know, trying to achieve that. So I was doing my Alim course for 4, 5, 6 years, you know, from about 2013 onwards. And I did the master's, then I was in corporate law. So it was like slowly building up the key kind of pieces of the puzzle to eventually, it kind of all led to Islamic Finance Guru. But I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know what the end point was.
That's exactly the point, right? You can only connect the dots looking backwards. You know, yeah. that's what we're trying to figure out, how you came to be where you are today. Okay, so you mentioned that you were looking at the different corporate jobs, but then you said that eventually, because I remember I read somewhere, I listened to your story that you were, is it correct that you were working at the corporate jobs, but you were not, then, is that true? Then you kind of, as you said, you started the thing in the background, now it became your main thing, like, I mean, Islamic finance career. Is it right? Can you just, because I know sometimes this thing is like a bit fuzzy, you know, this thing transition periods, it's not that clear. You do one thing one day, then do the other thing another day. It takes time. But at the same time, these are the stories you want to kind of relay to people, you know, to understand the things, whatever you want to do in your dreams, it's not something that happens one day, it just takes time. And this is how it is then. And this is an example, you know?
Yeah. So I think for me, it was like, it started off as a blog, as I said, in 2015. Mm-hmm. And it was like, it was very organic. Like, you know, I just finished my master's, I was doing my corporate law stuff. And I knew, you know, I was researching for myself, essentially, on Islamic finance. And I was writing for myself because I found things were either too simple or too complicated online. I just wanted to put it in language that I understood, that, you know, I could kind of then, and it wasn't like really simple either. So, and people found it quite useful, and we started getting a very small following, and we just plugged away writing for fun, really, for many years. And in the interim, there was other various pieces going on in the background. So one of the things that we were doing as lawyers was doing a lot of pro bono, free work for Muslims.
Your language changed from I to we. So what happened there? Why start saying we?
Oh, so Mohsin, my co-founder, he's the guy who's involved with me at Islamic Finance Guru. So So that's kind of where we started working together.
So it's like you guys, like 5 years ago, okay, you guys said, you know what, let's start this blog. This is how it came to be, or?
Yeah, pretty much. Like we knew each other from university and were very good friends since then. But it was, and we'd like, you know, dabbled in all sorts of like random things like stock trading and things like that after university. But it was, and we'd, you know, we'd thought about a few different like entrepreneurial projects before, but nothing like really seriously. And Islamic Finance Guru, again, it wasn't like a serious thing. It was more like, you know, we wanted to do a blog and let's do a blog and see what happens.
This is a joyful thing, right? Like, let's figure this out. You know, there's nothing serious. No more expectations. Let's see how it goes.
Exactly. And so, and he was a corporate lawyer as well. So we were both doing like, you know, pro bono work and doing discrimination cases and what have you. And we were also doing angel investing. So investing in early stage startups. And we realized a few years into this that actually, you know, the biggest impact that you can have is essentially make Muslims wealthier. Because if you are wealthier, then you're automatically just better, able to defend yourself legally. You can pay for the barristers. You can get the media coverage. You can get the politicians on your side. You can do everything, right? You can get better health outcomes, education outcomes. It links to economics a lot of the time. And at the same time, you know, we were doing this angel investing business and I was working as a funds formation lawyer, and I was seeing how, the elite of this world, they invest their money. So like funds I'd worked on include funds that Larry Page, the founder of Google, invested in. I've seen how the Gates Foundation, I've worked in funds with the Gates Foundation, various different sovereign wealth funds, and also, you know, the Jeff Bezos family office as well. So you see all these guys, how they are investing their money. And you don't see that many Muslims, if any Muslims, that are practicing at that level. And this is, you know, a great area that you know, the best in the world in terms of business make money. And so we had these kind of like general thoughts that kind of all pulled together with Islamic Finance Guru, which was like, you know, the pro bono work is great, but actually our impact can be better if we just help everyone get wealthier, and we'll support the pro bono work that way. And then at the same time, you know, this angel syndicate, angel work that we're doing, why don't we just pool all of our money together and do this in a much more impactful way, and help Muslims get access to this world, but also help Muslim entrepreneurs get access to the capital as well. And so that's kind of how Islamic Finance, through all the different pieces, kind of pull together into what it is today.
Sounds very interesting. You know what? Speaking of finance and wealth and this, one of the things I've noticed among, I think this exists in all communities, especially Muslim communities, we have this thing about the money, you know, especially correct me if I'm wrong, that general, I'm not talking about the right way of thinking, but general understanding about money among Muslims is usually negative, like very negative. Do you agree with me on this?
About Muslims in media?
No. I mean, no, that's another topic. What I'm saying is that us as Muslims, our understanding about money is usually negative. Do you agree with me on this one?
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I think that it's...
And why do you think it is? Because you are the finance guru. So you tell me why. Why is it like that? Why, like, do in general? Like, you and me, maybe we have a better, different understanding. Even myself, I remember when I was starting my entrepreneurship journey, like, I used to have these things, like, this, like, misconceptions about money. Like, if you have a lot of money, you must be, you know, rich, filthy rich, and this and that. But then you begin to see, is it really true? Like, is all the rich guys are bad guys? It's not, right? And what does it really money mean? If someone is rich, it doesn't mean someone stole it somewhere, right? It doesn't necessarily mean that. Yeah, sometimes it may mean this, but it's not the case. If you talk about entrepreneurship, it's something else. I just would like to know, like, your take on this. Like, why, not only as human, but as even Muslims, as like we look at this money as something negative. When in reality, what is it? Just tell us Tell us about this.
Yeah, sure. So I think that
sorry to put you on the spot, but
I actually wrote like a quite a long article called "Is It Wrong to Be Rich in Islam?"
Okay.
Which you should check out. It's interesting. Okay. At least I think so. And in it, the argument is, in a nutshell, that no, it is not wrong to be rich in Islam, but you may need to make sure that your relationship to wealth is such that it is in your pocket and not in your heart.
And in your head, not in your heart, yeah?
Exactly. And you are making money a means to an end, which is what you really believe in. It's Islamic and it's getting you to Jannah ultimately. It's not the end in itself. And money is a strange thing that I think it changes some people more than it does others. And if you are, you know, you should try and get as much money as you possibly can until the point where you find that, you know what, this is changing me in a way that is not good. And that's the point that I think you stop. Then there are some people who are able to continue. They don't really, you know, get affected by money that much, and they can make huge amounts of money and are very charitable still. And, you know, they're not affected by it. And if that's you, then I think it's almost like your duty to try and make as much money as possible, because you are from amongst the few people who can do that and handle it as well mentally. So you have almost like a duty on you from your perspective to do that, because you need like the Abdurrahman ibn Aws and the Uthman ibn Affans of the world to actually do something. And if, you know, the Abdurrahman ibn Aws of the world said, you know what, I'm not going to make any money, then I actually think that the Muslim community as a whole
would suffer in some way. Yeah.
Childhood Questions are sponsored by Ali Huda. Ali Huda is a video on demand streaming platform for Muslim children where they can watch cartoons and shows while learning about Islam the fun way. If you are a Muslim parent, this will be one of your best investments. Visit www.alihuda.com for a 7-day free trial. Now back to the show.
Because there's not that many of you out there.
That's a very interesting take. So what you're saying is that let the money be in your head. This is a lesson one, right? Let the money be in your hand, not in your heart. And lesson two, what I'm saying is that what you're saying is that I think I also heard something similar. So what I'm learning is that so money for some people, it really amplifies what's truly in their heart, right? It will show them their true colors in some extent, and in some cases, as you're saying in some of the campaigns of the Prophet you mentioned, when you see them getting more money, it doesn't really change them, right? And they will be doing even more good. And if that is the case, that's almost like your obligation to make more money and benefit others. That's an interesting take, very interesting take. Okay, so what is money? How do you define money? What is the money? What's wealth?
Am
I asking you difficult questions?
No, at all. Do you mean in like a technical sense or
no? I mean like define as the way you want. Like, because you see, I think everything starts with definition, right? So, how should we look at money as Muslims? How do we our approach should be to the money?
Yeah, I think we should approach money as very instrumental, and it should be you know, something that you use as a tool to achieve your life goals. And those life goals, most, and this is the bit where people fail, because most people don't have life goals. They don't have a set of you know, end locations that they want to get to that are inspired by the, you know, Islam and, you know, their religion. And when you don't have those end principles or end goals in mind, and therefore a kind of a general pathway to get there, you know, in front of you, at that point, you see that other people are going for money because it's a nice thing and you can do nice things with it. And therefore you go for money because of these short-term, you know, pleasure-inducing reasons, as opposed to how you should see everything around you as in tools to get you to the end point. And I think money, just like, you know, everything else, your time, you know, your connections, whatever, you know, if you don't have, if you're trying to maximize for short-term pleasure, then you will abuse it. If you're trying to maximize for long-term pleasure, i.e. Jannah, then I think you will use it in a much more effective way.
I see, that's a very interesting approach. One of the dilemmas as Muslims we always face, as you know, that deen or dunya, right? That's the thing, we're always thinking always a balancing act. Like, what's your take on this? Like,
So I think that, there is almost like it's a false dichotomy. I think that deen is actually, you know, dunya and vice versa. Because if you are saying that, you know what, I'm going to spend 8 to 10 hours of my day doing dunya-related stuff, and then I'll think about the deen, I mean, that's a third of your life. That's like 30 you know, years or so, potentially. Now, if that's the case, then it's a bit of a waste of your, a third of your life doing something that isn't actually going to benefit your akhirah. Now, if you make your, you know, your means of sustenance also something that gets you to the akhirah, then your entire, you know, your entire dunya becomes your akhirah, if that makes sense. And I think most people should try and get to that point. And I think everyone, in fact, should try and get to that point. And it's a matter of intention and it's a matter of mindset. And like, you don't have to become an imam to make your dunya rework your akhirah. You could be a telecoms engineer, right? And that could be your akhirah if you are approaching it with the right intentions and thinking about, you know, bigger than yourself.
That's a very interesting approach. I actually 100% agree with you. Like, as you said, it's not deen or dunya, actually. Dunya and deen, because you gotta go to the you know, to the akhirah, as even from here through here, right? You have to go through here. You cannot avoid it. You just have to go through this. Very interesting approach. So what you mentioned is interesting. So what you're saying, look, Ibrahim, so if you look at today, your life today, how it turned out to be and what you're doing today, would you consider yourself a person, a Muslim, who is who's doing what you love and loving what you do as of now?
Yeah.
So, if you're now looking back, like, if you look back, like, this is the whole story, right? That's from your childhood, what you study, and to coming to this point. When you're connecting the dots, looking backwards, like, do you see a theme? Do you see a pattern? Or do you see a thing that connected all of them coming through? Maybe it's the one thing, maybe it's a couple of things. What do you think made you just follow you, who you are today, and come to this point? What would you say to the listeners? What could it be? Do you see a pattern? Some extent.
Sorry, say that last thing again.
So what I'm saying is that, like, when remember, like, the mention, like, when you were 14 years old, you were teaching to kids and 12 kids, and your parents taught you to be, you know, to serve the community. But at that time, probably you didn't have an idea that what you are doing today, right? You are teaching finance to Muslims. But it's somehow or some way, now that's a thing for you. Like, what we are trying to understand is, like, what happened along the way that it takes you to this point in life? What was it? How did, because you see, the question I'm asking is that, so in each episode, what I really try to understand when I'm talking to people like yourself is that, trying to understand them is that, the first of all, like, these people, like, as we call the Muslims on fire, these are the people who do what they love and they love what they do and impact people, right? The question is that, how do we get there? How do a person who's listening, imagine there's a teenager from Bangladesh or Pakistan or Sri Lanka or maybe Uzbekistan listening to this podcast and say, okay, Muhammad is good. Muhammad, okay, he studied Oxford. He's now doing, mashallah, the VC, and he's helping the Muslims with the finance. But how did he get there? How did he find out what he really cared about, and how did he get there? That's the question. What would you say to that?
I'd say that... you know, you constantly try and recalibrate your, as you are going further and further down the road on this journey to make sure that you are trying to optimize your resources to kind of trying to get the best out of yourself. But I think more than anything else, just having quite challenging goals and having like level 4 goals rather than level like 1 or 2 goals. Because let's say it's like a stratosphere and there's different levels. If you are aiming upwards and trying to get to the 4th level, even if you don't quite get to exactly the point where you want to get to on the 4th level, but you end up slightly to the left or the right, you're still at the 4th level. And the key thing wasn't even the level, the key thing wasn't even the end point where you got to a level 4. The key thing was that you were the impetus upwards to get to that position. Whereas if you were aiming at level 1, then you just wouldn't have that level of impetus because it's quite easy to be at level 1. So I guess what I'm saying is having lofty ambitions and targets and challenges for yourself essentially just gets the best out of you.
I see. Okay, so aim high.
Exactly.
Okay. So tell us about like what you guys up to these days. What are you guys doing? I mean, I know you started as a blog, but today, where are you guys? That's the first question. The question is, what do you guys see yourself in the next 3-5 years?
So I think that inshallah, we just want to continue with what we're doing on, we've got Islamic Finance Guru and we've got IFG.VC, which is the Angel Syndicate. With Islamic Finance Guru, we really want to continue on this journey, become much more global in our reach and in helping Muslims all over the world. We would like to continue tightening the various different bits of our company, like for example the Halal Investment Platform. We'd like to upgrade that. We'd like to improve our content. We'd like to improve our website, even honing on that side of things. And then with IFG.VC, I think the next stage is continue and grow the number of the amount that we invest per month from somewhere like 300,000-400,000 to over 1 million per month. And then also potentially set up a fund alongside it and then think about other interesting things, because there's so many different ways that Muslims can be helped to get into good investments that they don't really have right now. So yeah, a bunch of different things to keep us busy probably for the next 10 years or a lifetime.
I see. So tell us to the listeners, where can they follow you? Where they can find you to want to explore you, your personality, your journey? What would be the best place?
So we've got the website, obviously Islamic Finance Guru. You should subscribe to that and that way you'll get my regular emails and find out what we're up to. But also YouTube is at Islamic Finance Guru. YouTube is a good place, or Twitter as well, but we're not that active on Twitter.
I think no one is that active anymore on Twitter except politicians.
Or LinkedIn, or if you're a professional you can get me on LinkedIn as well.
Sounds good. So one of the questions I usually ask towards end is that, is there a question I should have asked, but didn't, and maybe you want to ask and answer that question to yourself, to the listeners, potential followers?
I don't think so. I think you've done a very good job.
We covered everything. We know everything about you, I guess.
Yeah.
No. Tell us something. So since your co-founder is not here, tell us something interesting about Brother Mohsin. Maybe sooner or later we'll catch up with him as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Mohsin is he's a great guy. He studied French and Russian at Oxford.
Russian. Wow, yeah. Interesting. Do you know I speak Russian?
Yeah, I gathered because you were saying there was a big Russian influence, right, in Uzbekistan.
Yeah, it used to be. So we should probably speak with him in Russian. That'd be awesome. Yeah,
I don't think he's that good at Russian, though. I think he's much better at French. And he's great in the sense that, I've known him for that so long. And it just helps from a trust perspective. Like, he's a completely known quantity. His strengths, his weaknesses, his family and everything, right? So that really helps. And I think one of the big strong qualities that Mohsin has is he's got a great commercial instinct.
What instinct?
Commercial instinct.
Okay.
Which I think is actually very rare, having kind of experienced the world a lot more over the last decade. I think there's very few people who have like a good business instinct, and he's got it. So, so that's been really helpful for us.
Sounds good. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your story. And we'll catch up one of these days. Until then, for the listeners, we'll include in the show notes your links as well. And may Allah help you in your journey. And may Allah help you help Muslims to become wealthy. And so we can help us and everyone else. Having said that, I say assalamu alaikum.
If you are an entrepreneur with a product or service for the Muslim market, let's get in touch. We are Halal.ad, a marketing agency and ad network for the ever-growing Muslim market. We can help you reach millions of Muslims to grow your business. Visit www.halal.ad for a 30-minute free consultation. Now back to the show.